In this episode of Movie Rollers, we're going to review 3 Days to Kill and Non-Stop. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, you as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Good evening.
Yay, we're together again.
After what seems like a long time.
Recording.
Yeah. Although we were together.
We were together. Weekend. Yes.
At SWSW.
And it feels SXSW.
It feels like a bit of a hiatus. SXSW, by the way, for the uninitiated, is South by Southwest, which is the big Austin, well, I would call it a film festival, other than it's so much more than that. They have Interactive, which is nerd stuff, i.e. my stuff, yay. They also have
Muzak.
A music festival, which is how the whole thing began. But I think 20 years ago or so, they included film. And as if you are a regular listener of Movie Rollers, you'll know that we attended last year and saw some great stuff. So, this was your first SXSW.
Yes.
What are your thoughts compared to the other film festival? Because you go to the TIFF, obviously. That's the most prestigious one, I think, of all the ones that we've been to.
Yeah, it's kind of very hip and happening. You can feel the energy. There's a lot of excitement. It's kind of more hip. I had a good time.
Yeah, it's got more of a pop culture feel to it,
correct,
doesn't it?
Whereas, you know, TIFF always feels more kind of more serious, you know,
high
academic film type, because, you know, they release a lot of the Oscar hopefuls at Toronto.
Say, yeah.
So it has more of a red carpety, you know,
right. This
person's here and that person's here and this one's going to be the big Oscar winner.
Kind of.
So it has a different vibe.
And I must say, the thing I loved the most about doing South by Southwest with both of you was we could talk about the movies after the movies showed.
True.
That was so liberating to talk about the movies together.
Yeah.
Again, for those who don't listen regularly, we never talk about movies after we've seen them. This conversation that you hear on our podcast is fresh. It's real. We never have any discussions. We have to remain completely poker-faced when we exit most movies, except at film festival. And the only reason we break that rule is because a lot of the times, stuff that we see there doesn't get a general release, which is heartbreaking when you think about some of the quality movies that we see that may never see the light of day.
Yeah, and plus we spend so much time together over several days, I think we would just combust.
We would.
If we had to withhold our opinions for so long, I would.
Plus you want to save people time seeing the crappy ones.
Correct.
Right, don't go and see that one. But most of them, fortunately, are, oh my God, I just saw this great movie.
Yeah.
So watch out on the website. We're going to do some South by Southwest content specials. We took lots of pictures and we went to lots of movies. And we'll do probably a dedicated podcast in due course.
Yeah, and I think there were some remarkable finds, and you guys would agree. Yeah,
great documentaries.
Some amazing documentaries, yes.
Cool. All right, well, again, listen out and check our website regularly. We will definitely post our South by Southwest content as soon as we can. And for those of you who follow us on Facebook, and if you don't, shame on you, there's already been quite a few posts there that we did direct live from the conference of sessions and so on and so forth. So, find out what we thought in a podcast coming to you soon. Back to today's material, then. We've got two movies, 3 Days to Kill and Non-Stop. Ooh,
I have both the intros.
Okay.
One old man is as good as the other.
Pick one to start and let's go.
3 Days to Kill.
All right.
Okay, so in this heart-pounding action thriller, Kevin Costner, yay, is, believe it or not, a dangerous international spy who is determined to give up his high-stakes life to finally build a closer relationship with his estranged wife and daughter, whom he's previously kept at arm's length to keep out of danger. But first, he must complete one last mission, even if it means juggling the two toughest assignments yet. Hunting down the world's most ruthless terrorist and looking after his teenage daughter for the first time in 10 years whilst his wife is out of town. So this stars, obviously, Kevin Costner, Amber Heard, Haley Steinfeld and Connie Nelson. So we all saw this movie and I'm dying to hear what you thought of this. So, Yazdi.
Okay, so I do not think anyone should spend time talking about movies or writing about movies unless they truly love films. And I'm in general very tolerant of movie reviewers who hate every movie that they watch. I personally may not love every film, but I think you guys would agree that in general, 90% of the films get a score of 6 or higher, you know, from me, usually. Yeah. I tend to overwhelmingly love movies. So that is why I'm genuinely, truly surprised when I watch a film that's just plain awful. I hate it when I hate films, but there's no two ways about it. This film is awful. I just hate it when I hate movies. I really hate this one.
Joe. Oh, hang on. Yes, do you think he's going to like it or not? I can't tell.
Gonna like it.
I think he's going to like it too. Don't change your mind now just because we said that.
No, I can't. My notes are right here. So, I mean, in all honesty, this isn't a great movie, but I don't think it's an awful one. I mean, Yazdi, I mean, there's been much worse efforts out there that we've seen. Nothing comes to mind right now, but it to me, the biggest surprise about this movie was, you know, what the heck drew Kevin Costner to this material? Because there's nothing here. I mean, the action stuff was passable, I think. There were some reasonably well choreographed action sequences that were kind of fun to watch, but there was a really awful father daughter thing going on here that was just, it was so badly done. I mean, it was hammy, cheesy, whatever word you want to use. It just didn't work, and it was almost embarrassing to see accomplished actors trying to act their way through bad writing.
Yeah, what a confused mess. Although I really did enjoy watching Kevin Costner, who seems to be making a little bit of a comeback since Man of Steel, I think. Okay, there is so much wrong with this movie. I agree with Yazdi. This is completely awful. The tone is all over the place. The acting by Amber Heard is so awful. I mean, it's doggone awful. And let's not forget, the story is really bad and strange and weird, and it makes no sense at all. The plot holes are so large, I actually thought I was watching three different movies that had been spliced together. The continuity and editing are so poor in this movie. And what happened to Halle Steinfeld? She had so much promise.
Yeah, I think more than anybody else in the movie, I mean, her character really, I mean, you get a whiplash just by watching her character change from scene to scene. I mean, she's like a petulant teenager one time, another time, you know, she's this, you know, kind of sudden, you know, suddenly created, you know, spy. At other times, she's this caring daughter. It's not even the same character. And I actually physically felt embarrassed for her to be in that movie. I don't know what it is. I mean,
I'm hopeful she's not a one-hit wonder, because I just loved her in True Grit, and ever since then I haven't seen her in anything good.
And even the Amber Heard character.
I mean, oh my God!
You know, the movie starts with a scene where she is, you know, recruited, or she is within the CIA, and she's told, you know, you're going to go and do this job. And then she turns into some kind of a comic book vamp. I mean, she wears these weird wigs.
Yeah.
And she has this strange accent.
Do you know what I have written down, Yazdi?
What's going on?
I said it's Nurse meets Dominatrix, and we're supposed to believe that she works for the CIA? Okay.
But why does she have to wear those wigs?
It's, I mean, so it made odd. No sense. It's so odd.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, look, here's a film where the baddies are called the Wolf and Albino. And then there are lines in the movie, like, I actually wrote this one down. I can't believe I could actually read my writing in the dark. Kill or die. I mean, it's really hammy. It's a really bad film.
This is a product of many years ago. I mean, written by Luc Besson, who's penned, mm-hmm. you know, some other movies that I think we all quite liked. I mean
he penned the absolute biggest gangster film in my mind, or one of the biggest, which is The Professional. I mean, he's done right. some remarkable films. So I don't know if this was just by the book, something they did on the side, or if it has the hands of too many people on it. I didn't let you finish, please.
Well, no. I mean, even MCG, who directed it, is it McG?
I think it's McG.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even tell you who directed it or who wrote it.
Yeah, you always miss that.
I know, I'm
it's
sorry.
It's so important. But he's directed a number of action flicks. None of them have been, like, you know, well thought of, as far as I can tell. But Charlie's Angels, the remake with Drew Barrymore and co. a few years ago.
They were decent.
And Terminator Salvation. You know, he was given the third Terminator with Christian Bale, which was not a great movie, but, you know, passable. This is not an incompetent director by any means. But this...
Maybe he was on Ambien.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, he's, you know, all those other movies at least had a lot of style over substance. You know, Charlie's Angels was very stylish. Yeah. And, you know, even Terminator 3 had a really good feel about it, you know, look about it. This one is just all over the place. And I wish it had gone all out camp, you know, just being silly with, like, with characters like the wolf and the albino. You know, you could make something really cheesy.
Yeah.
Or be serious, but... You know, this is... Okay, remember we were talking a couple of months ago about Jack Ryan, the movie with...
Yes.
Tom Cruise.
No, Chris Pine.
With Chris Pine.
Thank you, that's right. Yeah, sorry.
With Chris Pine.
And I said, Reacher, sorry.
Jack Reacher. Come on, Jack Reacher is a good movie.
Come on, I was not a million miles away.
No, you were close. But that movie was at no point a B movie. It was very proficiently made. It was enjoyable. Correct. You know, it was playing by the genre, but it was never a B movie. This movie could only hope to be a B movie. It's so bad. It's like a D or an E or an F movie.
It's so bad.
And, you know, like you said, not to monopolize the conversation, but in spite of all of this, Kevin Costner is so good in this. I mean, I don't know what happened with his career. I mean, he deserves the career that Liam Neeson has.
Yeah.
You know,
and maybe that's what drew him to this material. You know, it opens up a different side of him that maybe we haven't seen. Maybe, you know, because he is older now.
But he looks weathered. I like that he looks weathered. He looks
so
but,
nice. Yeah. He looks really
But compared
believable.
To when he was, you know, in his heyday
right.
in the 80s and 90s with, you know, Robin Hood and Dances with Wolves, he's an old man now. And he likes the idea of being the old badass action guy. It's the Liam Neeson niche.
And it worked. But, I mean... This should have been a completely different movie. I mean, at the beginning, I don't know about you guys, when it started, I thought it had promise and it kind of had this Lincoln Lawyer feel to it with the music and the way that the color of the texture, the color, and then it just disintegrated.
Yeah, I mean, he was, even in the most preposterous scenes, he was believable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think he would make a very, very credible, good action hero. He deserves better. He just needs somebody who would... Give him that opportunity.
I think on paper, this may have looked like one of those kind of retro 80s type action movies. And like you say, Yasti, you have to pick a side with this, right? Go full on camp or go full on serious. But whatever you do, do it 110%. And here it was muddled in tone and theme and everything. I personally lay the hands at the writer's door for this one. I think the action sequences were too well strung together. But I can't help but feel that they all kind of, you know, when they wrapped the final cut in the editing room and screened it for the first studio execs, they were all like, oh, God, what did we make here?
I mean, there's a B story going on that you could have completely done without.
Yeah.
I mean, that B story is
with
just...
With the daughter?
Yeah, with the daughter. With, and then even the C story with the...
The ex-wife?
No, with the meds.
Oh, yeah, what? That,
see,
oh, that
exactly.
So
three films, three completely, totally different films spliced together. I have nothing more to say on
the
this.
The only
one.
Other thing I have to say is it's very obvious this movie was originally made as an R-rated movie, but it's been kind of digitally modified in places to get a PG-13 rating. Did you guys? Like, there's a scene in a strip club where things are so strategically placed, I think they have been digitally placed afterwards. Maybe you guys didn't even notice that. I think so. Just so it wouldn't get an R rating, but I wish they would just make up their mind.
I think I was doing everything to keep myself away.
They're doing that too much these days. Yeah. Why can't we have an R-rated action movie? I mean, are adults not going to the cinema enough that we have to make sure we get the teenagers in?
I think that's what it is.
I mean, really, you know, they did it with RoboCop, which is still a tragedy of epic proportions. But I mean, you know, this can be an action movie that anyone could enjoy as an adult. I mean. Why? Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hollywood today.
Yes, let's score this. So, Joe, why don't you go first?
So I didn't hate this movie in the moment. It kind of made me smile because I could see what they were wanting to make. I could see what the vision for this movie was on paper, right? But what played out in front of us made mincemeat of some very accomplished actors. I think the actors here are all capable of so much more, and yet they look like fools. They look like, it looks like acting 101, kind of, you know, level one practice class. And I think, I can't help but feel, but that's just bad writing and then bad handling of bad writing. So nothing here to recommend this movie. I wouldn't mind watching it on the back of a plane if I'd watched everything else and I didn't want to watch a rerun of Top Gear or something like that. So I'm going to give this a very, very generous 5 out of 10.
Ooh, Yasti.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, I mean, I wasn't offended by this movie at any level, but it just had so much promise that it coming off so inept was really unfortunate. I think this is the kind of movie that, as Roger Ebert likes to say, you know, actors have serious conversations with their agents with afterwards, you know, like, you know, you better not have it 3 days on the kill, you know. But yeah, I mean, there's no two ways about it. This is just a bad film, and I give it a 3 out of 10.
I'm with Yazdi. 3 days to kill. This movie will kill your spirits in about 30 minutes. And you'll be asking, when will this end? Kill me now. So I'm going to give this one a 3 out of 10 as well.
Ouch. Ouch.
Honestly, that Amber Heard character was the most bizarre character I've ever seen in a movie. So and poor thing, 10. Because she's getting so much press for being Johnny Depp's fiance. E! News moment.
So 3 out of 10. Does that mean you would turn it off on Netflix?
Yeah, I wouldn't watch it.
Because I would have sat through it. That, you know, that's why I gave it a 5. I would have endured, but I would have probably had the laptop open and you know.
I would have fast forwarded.
Gone to the bathroom and gotten sodas without pausing.
If I was at the back of the plane, I would continue watching it, but I would at some point roll my eyes saying, oh my God, who made this film?
So, talking about back of planes,
yes.
Our next movie.
Segue Rashmi into Non-Stop. You're introducing this one as well.
So Non-Stop is a suspense thriller played out at 40,000 feet in the air. During a transatlantic flight from New York City to London, which I think many of us have done before, U.S. Air Marshal Bill Marks receives a series of cryptic text messages demanding he instruct the government to transfer $150 million into an offshore account. Until he secures the money, a passenger on this flight will be killed every 20 minutes. This stars Liam Neeson, Julianne Moore, Michelle Dockery, Scoot McNairy, and even a small, tiny little appearance by Lupita Nyong'o. And I didn't write down who directed it or wrote it again, Joe. So maybe you can fill that in as we go.
Briefly, so you mentioned who stars in it. It was written by John W. Richardson and Christopher Roach and directed by I don't know how to pronounce it. Jome. I'm going to call it Jome. Jome Collette-Serra. Sorry, guy, if I pronounce your name wrong. And sorry if you're a female, because we really haven't done our homework here. This is very unprofessional of us, Movie Wallace.
No.
Haume. Okay. Haume Collette-Serra. Not really known for anything big as I look across his CV.
That's probably why I didn't write anything down.
That's exactly why you didn't write something down. So, who wants to give their opinion?
Okay, I'll go first. Okay, so this is a classic whodunit in the air. I mean, there's nothing more that you can even say about this other than whoever you think it's going to be, it's never that person. And I was trying to be really super clever and trying to be ahead of the game. But just for the sheer fact that I couldn't work out who it was... And it was like a really good episode of Cluedo. I really enjoyed this movie.
Real good episode of what?
Like Cluedo. Clue.
Oh, yeah, Clue. Yeah.
You know, it's like Clue in the air.
The English version is Cluedo.
Yeah, Cluedo.
Like the French Clue?
Yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Like D-E-A-U?
Well, yeah, it's got like a D-O at the end. Cluedo.
Let's Wikipedia that after the show.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, for that reason, I really liked it.
So I think Non-Stop is... phenomenally stupid film. And I can count the ways that it's stupid in just a moment once we get talking about it. But I have to also admit that I have an affinity for movies which are set on airplanes. I really do. There's something about them. You know, it sets up such a claustrophobic space because there's literally nowhere you can go. And it kind of, I really enjoy those movies. I enjoy movies set, you know, those B movies set on a plane. And I think this movie is a B movie set on a plane. It's, like I said, phenomenally stupid, but minute by minute, I really enjoyed watching it.
Did you work it out? Did anyone work out who it was?
No, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, see, it's never the person who you think it is. And I think I was being really clever. Like, I even tried to, like, outsmart it, and then I was wrong.
Well,
there was an obvious red herring that you obviously took the bait on. Because I knew it wasn't the red herring, but anyway... So, I thought this movie was brilliant.
Oh.
Glee, mediocre.
Well, Liam. What did you say?
Brilliantly mediocre.
Oh, okay.
I mean, for me, it felt like Die Hard on a plane with a couple of plot twists mixed in. It was somewhat brainless entertainment. And it was notable to me in that it was not especially good or bad. It was just middle-of-the-road kind of action fodder. And I liked the fact that at some point when they were putting this together... They were like, to hell with plausibility. right? Like, yeah, to hell totally. With it. This doesn't
That's what I mean, right.
Like, you're saying phenomenally stupid, and I'm like, implausible.
It's preposterous, yeah.
Yeah, so, but then I think that was a conscious decision to do that, and once you free yourself of those chains of like having to make sure that there's integrity behind every single plot line, you can set yourself up for a reasonably fun ride. And I think that's what they chose to do here.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, you know, look, this is what I think. It takes some form of smartness to do something like this in an incredibly small space because your options are limited.
Well, no, that's why you set it here, right?
Right.
You set it here so that you have that tension.
Right. And I think just because there was that much tension and I really couldn't figure it out, I mean, I think it deserves props for that. And I felt incredibly claustrophobic, Yazdi, to your point. And I think it was well acted. I mean, you know, Liam Neeson is always Liam Neeson. He's the same character that he was in, you know, Taken 1, 2, and probably 3 that's in pre-production. Or, you know, the next 3 days.
He really doesn't have much luck with daughters.
No, he doesn't. He's the same. It's the same guy, right? And considering the guy's in his 60s, I mean, he does a really good job. He's really cool to watch.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much I can, you know.
Go for it.
Go.
just.
So number one, okay. Number one, why must the hero in these movies always have to be so tortured? Why can't we just have somebody, you know, who is reasonably well adjusted? And, you know, Hollywood always keeps going back.
But then it would be Channing Tatum.
Yeah, what's wrong with that? I want to see Channing Tatum do nonstop. He's just happy, you know, and he's out to, you know, go after the bad guys. Why does he have to be alcoholic? Why does he have to have a sick child or a dead child? I mean, this is so books. Am I giving away spoilers?
Well, you know, this movie's been out for a while, so I don't think it's too terrible.
Well, I don't think it will change anyone's view of it.
I mean, it comes straight from the screenwriter's playbook, right?
Right.
Have a backstory. Well, what can the backstory be? It has to be some tortured individual, right? And so,
well, otherwise, he's got nothing to live for.
But, you know, and the other thing is, it's so, I mean, I can't even talk about it. It's so funny. This poor guy has to do everything, okay?
Yeah, he has
to shoot the bad guys. He has to, you know, convince everybody he's not the bad guy. And on top of it, a little girl is crying and the flight attendant calls and says, can you please talk to the little girl? She's crying. I was like, my God, somebody talk with this little girl. Slap her. You know, does the hero have to stop shooting the bad guys and come and talk with the little girl who's crying?
Well, he's the only one she trusts. But you know what got me is no one got fed on that flight.
Exactly.
And no one got a drink.
I said, there's no meal service on this flight. No wonder the bad guy was so irritated. They were all hungry, you know. And there's
low blood sugar.
And there's 150 people on this flight, yes, supposedly. And there's only 2 flight attendants, one of whom only shows up.
No, there were more. There were more. Yeah, but we only got a little bit of Lupita Nyong'o with a really bad Eliza Doolittle accent. She's like, all right, governor. And the same with Michelle Dockery. What was wrong with their accents?
I thought I was in
My Fair Lady.
But, well, Michelle Dockery is British, right?
No, she has a really posh accent on...
It was a flight to
Downton
London.
Downton Abbey. I know, but not... Come on, not everyone who lives in London speaks like, all right, mate, what would you like with your... Would you like a drink?
Don't forget the audience here, Rashmi. I mean, this is not highbrow entertainment,
no,
right?
No, but Lupita Nyong'o doesn't have to say, like, hello, governor.
But those were the only two flight attendants.
How embarrassing. She's an Oscar winner.
Okay, so can we also... Okay, so while we're at it...
Sorry.
I think this movie speaks about... not to get all political and serious about this movie, but I think it speaks about the state of hiring in Hollywood. If Lupita Nyong'o had not been hired to do 12 Years a Slave, this is the best role she can get. She came out of, you know, Harvard Film School, and she gets a bit role...
Yale, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, Yale, thank you. And she gets a bit role, you know, where she just sometimes shows up, like sometimes she just is disappearing for hours.
But in fairness, she had no experience on her resume, right? So she comes out of, you know, I mean.
I know, and comes on the plane and goes, hello, governor, would you like a drink?
Come on, Rashmi, give it up. it's what the part called for, right? So you can't give her a hard time for that. And I think they wanted it to be a British flight crew for whatever reason. It didn't actually make sense that it had to be a British flight crew, but that was the decision that was made.
That's their idea of sophistication.
Yeah, right. I mean,
let's glass up this joint. Yeah. Let's throw in a few British flight attendants. Go on.
I mean, no. I mean, let's just take a look at who actually wrote this movie, because I think that might yield some insight as to their approach to.
Yeah.
So it's a first-time screenwriter's movie. Okay. The screenplay is by John W. Richardson, top credit, and Christopher Roach. Again, both of them first-time screenplay credit. So. Look, I mean, you know, this is their high concept movie, right? This is a screenplay. They were like, we can sell this. We've got something we can sell. An action movie on a plane. It's going to star Liam Neeson.
And Julianne Moore. I mean, they got some heft.
But it's a great log line. Yeah. And there's enough twists in the plot that I think on paper, it looks like a good, a decent enough movie. And once I made the decision that this was going to be a big action movie with big thrills and spills, then you can get away with a lot more playfulness in terms of the credibility of it all.
Oh, it's got a doozy of a premise. I mean, I love the premise of the movie that they're on this flight and somebody's going to get killed every 20 minutes unless, you know, a certain amount of money gets transferred to a foreign bank account. Yeah. It's a great premise for a movie.
And it's enjoyable to watch.
And in the 1970s, we would have totally been on the edge of our seats.
I was on the edge of my seat.
Okay, so good. So it was effective.
But you know, how preposterous is this? Okay, so there's all this stuff happening on the plane. You know, all these calamitous events are happening, and then there come up all of their televisions. This CNN news correspondent comes up saying, you know, this Liam Neeson character has been found to be such and such, and like somebody's being shot on the plane, and everybody sits there and watches television. Who does that? And that everybody's TV had only that channel on, and they were all watching that at the same time.
Well, I just worried that no one went to the bathroom, and there was no one doing any form of exercise with their legs, and
so you know, you guys no can't meals. Get beyond the
no meals, and no one worrying about thromboembolotic like you know clots.
Okay, never mind.
Honestly,
we've lost the plot.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, this movie wasn't entirely credible. We've established that.
Yes. But let's move on. Jolly good time.
Yeah.
And it's a classic whodunit. I mean, literally, you are literally like checking off who did it.
Although when you do find out who did it, their motivations are so bizarre and so preposterous. I didn't buy a second of it.
It was irrelevant.
Yes.
Well, it was one of those slightly annoying whodunits where I don't think it was possible to figure it out until the end.
Well, right. I'm not going to watch it again to try.
No, but you know what I'm saying. There are those really well-crafted movies where I think...
If you were smart enough.
Yes.
If you were paying attention to the details, you'd have been like, oh, wow, I should have seen that coming.
Yeah, and like The Sixth Sense.
Yeah, that's not a whodunit, but...
No.
But it's one of those...
Kind of.
It's one that you can figure out.
It was like a who did it.
This one had, you know... Led you down the path of a deliberate red herring.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that because I thought I was being clever too. And I was I reckon it's going to be this character. And, you know, sure enough, events.
So who did you think it was?
Well, let's.
Maybe we can have spoiler alert.
Yeah, we'll do a spoiler alert after the podcast. Yeah. But anyway, let's wrap up because I think.
I think we cannot overestimate the value that a good actor brings. And I want to talk about Julianne Moore, who really, in this froth of a movie, brings so much, not just believability, but so much warmth to her character. I mean, she was the one person amongst everyone that I always believed. And I was just so happy to see her in a movie. So, you know, if you're going to make a cheesy B movie, hire Julianne Moore more often. She needs the paycheck and she's a good actor. She'll do your movie good.
She's a good
actor. And her
actress,
character, I thought, was very well written. I mean, she was multidimensional. There were complexities to her.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it was a really good piece of writing, I think, her whole plot line.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Joe, why don't you go first?
So, you know, I thought this movie was really good fun in the moment. You will never watch this on the back of an airplane because they will not show it on the back of an airplane. But, you know, it was good Friday night action fodder. Neeson was a badass as always. And, other than the fact that I think the movie took itself a little too seriously, you know, I think there was moments to have a little comic relief here and there. It would have been more of a, you know, if it had more of a Die Hard kind of tone, then I think the movie would have been all the better for it. But nonetheless, I enjoyed this film enough to give it a 7 out of 10.
Wow. Yazdi.
Yeah, I mean, I, at the risk of repeating myself, I think this is an unapologetically a B-movie. In fact, when other B-movies have had a long week and they're settling down after having a beer on Friday night, Nonstop is the B-movie that other B-movies watch. So I too, as preposterous as it is and as phenomenally stupid as it is, I really had a good time while I was watching it. And for that, I too will give it a slightly generous 7 out of 10.
Not entirely a smooth ride because there are many bumps along the way. And like we said before, no one on the flight even got fed. But this is worth a watch for a mindless film version of Clue on the plane. So I give it a 6 out of 10.
All right. This is a spoiler alert. So, Rashmi, you were asking who we thought had done it. I think, and again, if you haven't seen the film and you intend to see the film, tune out now. You can end the podcast safely here and not miss anything else. But Julianne Moore was, the one that they were leading us to believe.
Oh, I thought Michelle Dockery.
No, I never thought about it. Poor Michelle Dockery.
Right, exactly. That's why I thought. There was nothing leading there's a real, like, there was. There was like, oh, she could have snuck something on.
Okay.
I was trying to be over clever.
See, I think because of the fact that Julianne Moore was always next to Liam Neeson, at least through the first several rounds of the 20-minute killings,
yes.
I thought that it's got to be her. Because you would think that she cannot be her, and therefore it had to be her.
It was leading you towards that. And that was a deliberate, that was the kind of the red herring that they were slipping to us. Because her character never, her motives were never quite clear.
Correct.
She wanted to sit in a certain seat and all that kind of stuff. So that was a deliberate attempt by the writers to make us go,
yeah.
But and I thought that was well done. Again, I think, these guys did a reasonable job. It's their first screenplay. I look forward to see what else they've got going. Yeah. All right, well, let's wrap it up for today. The cat's arrived for her massage with Yazdi.
Yes. Yes. I'm giving her a nice
and
belly
she really
rub.
Is enjoying it here, yeah. Wow. I think she's about to smoke a cigarette.
Yeah. Any minute now.
Wrap up the podcast. Yes.
Mail at movieworlders.com for comments. We'd love to hear what you think of these two movies. Let us know, actually, if you ever want spoilers in the show. I mean, I've had one request, I know, from one viewer that wanted more spoilers, but we like to try and be careful and respectful of the filmmakers for where they deserve it and try not to give away plot details. But let us know. Twitter.com/movierollers, Facebook.com/movierollers as well. As we said at the beginning, look out soon on our website for some South by Southwest content. Hopefully these are movies that you will get a chance to see in some form this year, but we will definitely let you know what we thought. Until our next podcast, too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.